Patriots. And today is Tuesday, the 15th. And for the political update in this country, we still have a hand puppet pretending to be the president. We still have Jim Hansen's Muppet Show running the government. And we still have a slut pretending to be a vice president who used to be a man. It's a great day in America. Oh, forgot about this one. And our loved president, well, you don't really know where he's at, but we sure do miss him. I'll say that. Other than that, we have one big event that we can't avoid talking about every day, and that's Bard's Fest, 26th to the 29th of August in St. Charles, Missouri. Now, here's the deal, and this is a serious part of this. We're blessed to have the support of MyPillow in this. Mike Lindell is going to be speaking on the 27th of August. And they've provided a promo code for us for their products to give discounts. And so far, they've contributed over $20,000 to Bard's Fest. This is a company that has already lost $65 million in sales from the cancel culture. And he's fighting back. So we're pushing for what we call the slipper revolution. And I know you hear me say this every day, but I'm going to keep beating on this because I just can't believe this company in such a good way. A CEO that has Christ in his heart, that truly builds a company on those principles, gives, gives, gives. And now there's over $20,000 in our coffers for Bard's Fest, thanks to them. And we're going to celebrate that great CEO, Mike Lindell, on Friday, the 27th. And that's Slipper Revolution Day. So we're calling on all Patriots to buy a set of my slippers and more. I love their products. It's funny. I got sheets from my mom, and she says, I can't explain it. She goes, they are the most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. And that's not a solicitation. It's the truth. I've got them. They're amazing. Their sheets are amazing. Their towels are amazing. Their comforter's amazing. Yeah, I kind of went my pillow crazy. And my slippers are super. So use the Bard's code, B-A-R-D-S, promo code. Get discounts, 40% on slippers, 66% on pillows. Pillows are super comfortable. Get on over there. Support MyPillow. You can use an 800 number, 975-2939, 975-2939. That's an 800 number. You can call them if you want to talk to a real person. No big deal. Well, it is kind of a nice thing because that's a special number just for Bard's folks. And you can tell them where you heard about us, the greatest podcast on all the globe, on the web, Bard's FM. But use that promo code, Bard's, B-A-R-D-S. Get all sorts of discounts and support what I consider to be, in all forms, the type of company we want America to have. When we talk about MyPillow, we talk about a CEO, Mike Lindell, the fight that he puts up to defend this nation, what he gives back constantly. And he gets hammered. The press hates him. The corporate America is trying to cancel him out, not allow access to his products. Big names, big name brands out here trying to avoid or openly taking his product off the shelf so people won't be able to find his product. $65 million in sales that they have removed. And so we're going to take it back. And this is one of these fights we have to win. And it's a fight that's based on us going in and using our dollars as a weapon system, being selective in what we buy, supporting that company. And we chose My Slippers for the My Slipper Revolution for a couple reasons. One, it's a good thing to use to slipper slap somebody who's being stupid. But on the other hand, it is a symbolic issue for us to walk into that arena, into that place, and celebrate Mike Lindell. And when we take that discount code, $69 is a pair of my slippers, and we get Patriots to buy a million pair of my slippers, then we're at that place where we can return $69 million in sales that the cancel culture took away. and we win. We cancel the cancel culture. So this is a multi-pronged attack. And then at the Bard's Fest, we're going to announce seven companies that stabbed America in the back. And we're going to describe to them by action. We're going to show to them by action what real cancel culture does when it says, okay, we've had enough of you. But we want to raise one. That's MyPillow. We want to raise it high. MyPillow. And we're going to drop seven. And if you're out there and you work for one of those seven, just start by reading down that list on the Georgia event of all of you that backstabbed America because of voter ID laws. And if you're scoffing at this idea that patriots can have an effect on your bottom line, I would encourage you to reconsider that before zero hour. Because when zero hour hits, you're going to find the wrath of patriots and what they'll do. Oh, you'll be fine, don't worry. It's just that your company won't have any money. Or at least its sales will be gone. We'll take 40% of your sales. We'll sell your stock. And it won't be once. We'll just sell it and never give it back. And we'll never buy your products again. But MyPillow, you're going to see that continue to rise. So patriots, get on over there, use that Bard's code and fight. And, you know, I'm just going to feed off of that because I know that, and I push MyPillow every day, and I am pushing it hard. They're an amazing company. And it's far more to me than just promoting a company. It's a principle of action that we're talking about here. A principle of action. And we need to keep that principle of action before us in everything that we do. Our country was built on people taking big risks and doing bold things. And not being deterred by the tyrants of the time. And tyranny of that time took the form of kind of bad consequences. Because they were resisting the king of England, when you went against the king's edicts, it had slight little consequences like death, imprisonment on a slave ship or some prison boat. It never worked out well. And the British weren't known for their kindness. British military were draconian in some of the things they did. They just burn your house down, rape your daughter, and then deny it. So we have to be fearless here to save this nation. And it's not going to happen by itself. It's going to take a due diligence on everyone's part and a commitment every single day to getting that done. Our founding fathers wrote these 85 Federalist Papers. And the work that took just in the informational space of war was phenomenal. And they're still doing their regular duties and jobs to the nation. Everybody that's part of this movement now is a patriot in the true sense. And it only will get more intense as we move forward. And this is something to be careful of because no matter what happens, no matter what great feelings you may have about things, if things make a turn for the better or for the worse, I think they're going to get worse before they get better. We have to hold the vigilance of what it takes to keep a nation. Ben Franklin's quote went something like this. You now have a republic. Good luck in keeping it. And he was right. Because keeping it requires that people remain engaged and part of the process. Not get lazy and apathetic. We're far from out of this storm. And it is going to be a very challenging summer, as some would say, a very hot summer. And there's a lot ahead, and there's still so many things. Our country's in a complete state of political and cultural chaos, with two opposite directions being pulled on at once. One is this pathway towards transhumanism, which is the end goal of this lightly sugared cereal called socialism, that it, behind it is corporate tyranny, i.e. fascism, on a global scale that wants to enslave everybody through the technocracy and integration of tech into their body, known as transhumanism. And there's so many people out here that, one, don't know that what transhumanism is, two, can't get their head around the fact that, yes, there is an evil cabal that's going to transition you or kill you in the process. This is not strange conspiracy. And three, yes, you took the first shot in helping you make that walk down that plank. And some of what's in your body now is not reversible, at least not by known science today. So there is only one way that we know that you can reverse it, and that's through the grace of God. Not exaggerating, not saying that from a pulpit point of view. It's the truth. So if you've taken the shot, you're awakening now, and you're like, oh my goodness, what do I do? Get on your damn knees. Straight up. Get on your knees and start praying to Christ and beg for forgiveness, because that is the one way through this that we can be pretty assured that you got some chance of coming out of this, at least on the spiritual side, to come up on the upside. For everyone else that's holding the line out here and fighting, fighting hard, you've got to keep holding that line, and it's not going to get easier. The state of Oregon now is like number one on the list of fascist tyrannies. And they're putting all the rules in place at the state level to become full straight fascist. I mean like CCP fascist. They've already put the rules in place for confiscation of food. That's through the executive powers of the governor. They're already putting rules in place for mandate of all services with vax IDs. The only way you're going to fight and win that fight is to get at your county levels and start pressuring them to get off their butt and start passing measures that say no and quit this political polite dance and start getting strong and getting your sheriffs to stand up and start having a backbone and not just the will of the people. You know what? In the county level, a sheriff can ensure that people have the right of free will and choice, as he should. But when the state starts to encroach constitutionally on the space of the county, the sheriff has to draw that line. Because in a strange way, the sheriff becomes the executive of our local community. It's important to understand that. If you really look at how that's structured, the executive branch at a county is led by the sheriff. He's an elected official, an elected law enforcement official, but an elected official. And he has the power of posse comitatus, which is the power to mobilize a militia. So let's dig into Federalist Paper number 71, the duration of office of the executive. From the New York Packet, Tuesday, March 18, 1788, written by Alexander Hamilton. To the people of the state of New York, duration in office has been mentioned as the second requisite to the energy of the executive authority. This has relation to two objects, to the personal firmness of the executive magistrate in the employment of his constitutional powers, and to the stability of the system of administration which may have been adopted under his auspices. With regard to this first, it must be evident that the longer the duration in office, the greater will be the probability of obtaining important advantage. In a general principle of human nature, that a man will be interested in whatever he possesses in proportion to the firmness or precariousness of the tenure in which he holds it, will be less attached to what he holds by a monetary or uncertain title, momentary or uncertain title, to what he enjoys by a durable or certain title, and of course, will be willing to risk more for the sake of the one than for the sake of the other. This remark is not less applicable to a political privilege or honor or trust than to any article of ordinary people. The inference from it is that a man acting in the capacity of a chief magistrate under a consciousness that in a very short time he must lay down his office, will be apt to feel himself too little interested in it to its hazard any material censor or perplexity from the independent exertion of his powers, or from encountering the ill humors, however transient, which may happen to prevail, either in a considerable part of the society itself or even in the predominant faction in the legislative body. If the case should be that he might lay it down unless continued by a new choice, and if he should be desirous of being continued, his wishes conspiring with his fears will tend more powerfully to corrupt his integrity or debase his fortitude. In either case, feebleness and irresolution must be the characteristics of that station. Again, patriots, the founding fathers spoke very deeply through the concepts of human nature. They understood human nature, the ability for humans to be easily corrupted. And it's really a fundamental understanding that I think was endemic to most people in the colonial period. They were all dealing with tyranny. They had dealt with the British troops. They saw right before their very eyes how deceitful people could be, how corruptible foreign powers, men, and even neighbors would become. They saw spies in their country, people that they thought they could trust. Example, Benedict Arnold. It was relevant. It was prescient. It was in their face. Today, we deal with a culture of obedience, where people openly give their obedience to a government, even though it's openly tyrannical. You have Klaus Schwab telling the world exactly what they're going to do. We are going to own everything. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Where is the logic that says that people say, wait a minute. I'm not going to be happy not owning everything. No, instead, they're like, okay. They just don't believe that someone like Klaus Schwab represents any force majeure in this fight. And yet, he does. He's a voice of very, very powerful people. Watch what's happening on the landscape of America. BlackRock is sucking up properties faster than residential properties, faster than you can imagine. Gates is sucking up massive amounts of agriculture land. Why? Because they're owning everything. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Pretty amazing. Let's continue. There are some who would be inclined to regard the servile pliancy of the executive to a prevailing current, either in the community or in the legislature, as a best recommendation. But such men entertain very crude notions as well as the purposes for which government was instituted, as for the true means by which the public happiness may be promoted. The Republican principle demands that the deliberate sense of the community should govern the conduct of those whom they entrust the management of their affairs, but it does not require an unqualified compliance to every sudden breeze of passion or to every transient impulse which the people may receive from the arts of men, who flatter their prejudices to betray their interest. It is a just observation that the people commonly intend the public good. This often applies to their very heirs, but their good sense would despise the adulterer who should pretend that they always reason right about the means of promoting it. They know from experience that they sometimes err, and the wonder is that they so seldom err as they do, beset as they continually are by the wiles of parasites and sycophants, by the snares of the ambitions, the avaricious and desperate, by the artifices of men who possess their confidence more than they deserve it, and of those who seek to possess rather than to deserve it. When occasions present themselves in which the interests of the people are at variance with their inclinations, it is the duty of the persons whom they have appointed to be the guardians of those interests to withstand the temporary delusions in order to give them time and opportunity for more cool and sedate reflection. Instances might be cited in which a conduct of this kind has saved the people from very fatal consequences of their own mistakes and has procured lasting monuments to their gratitude to the men who have courage and magnanimity enough to serve them at the peril of their displeasure. But however inclined we might be to insist upon the unbounded compliance in the executive to the inclusions of the people, we can with no propriety contend for alike compliances to the humors of the legislature. The latter may sometimes stand in opposition to the former, and at other times the people may be entirely neutral. In either supposition, it is certainly desirable that the executive should be in a situation to dare to act his own opinion with vigor and decision. So you're seeing a very real assessment in these last two paragraphs of the potential corruption of men, the challenges faced by the executive, and the need to balance that with the will to be for the executive to act on its own freedom, not be subject to the threats and coercion of a legislative branch, which we have witnessed for the last 4 years with President Trump, which was essentially a coup through the legislative, and matched by a relative apathy, which they refer to as neutral, of the public. The U.S. public has developed to be one of the most apathetic publics in the world in dealing in governance. It is submissive. It has lost its way. It has lost its spine. And that's testimony by, I can show you one thing, it's not even government to prove it. How many people have sat quietly while their churches close, or their pastors tell them to put on a mask, or their pastors, worse, tell them to take an injection? Where is the outrage at the churches? Where is the public outrage of the church? Imagine if that would have happened in colonial periods. I swear they would have taken the preacher out and thrown him in the ocean and started over. Continuing. The same rule which teaches the propriety of a partition between the various branches of power teaches us likewise that this partition ought to be so contrived as to render the one independent of the other. To what purpose separate the executive or the judiciary from the legislative, if both the executive and the judiciary are so constituted as to be at the absolute devotion of the legislative? I would change that word in today's terms, patriots, to mercy. It's essentially what they're saying, at the absolute mercy of the legislative, which is exactly what has happened currently in our nation. Such a separation must be merely nominal and incapable of producing the ends for which it was established. It is one thing to be subordinate to the laws and another to be dependent upon the legislative body. Very critical term there. The first comports with, the last violates the fundamental principles of good government, and whatever may be the forms of the Constitution, unites all powers in the same hands. The tendency of the legislative authority to absorb every other has been fully displayed and illustrated by examples in some preceding numbers. The government, purely Republican, its tendency is almost irresistible. The representatives of the people in a popular assembly seem sometimes to fancy that they are the people themselves and betray strong symptoms of impatience and disgust at the least of opposition from other quarters, as if the exercise of its right by either the executive or judiciary were to breach of their privilege and an outrage to their dignity. They often appear disposed to exert an imperious control over the other departments, and as they commonly have the people on their side, they always act with such a momentum as to make it very difficult for the other member of the government to maintain the balance of the Constitution. This is an incredible paragraph when you consider it was written at the beginning of our country, not today. 240 years later, that is exactly where we are. A place where the legislative is now ruling over the country, thinking the executive is an annoyance and a problem for their objectives, that the judiciary isn't complying to what they insist, and railroading through legislation, it's not of the will of the people, but of the will of them. For they have lost their way, thinking that they are the people. Once you get to that mindset, the next levels of corruption are simple. It's easy to move them from where they are to the next level of being part of a larger puppet master scheme in which they are controlled by others through the various processes of coercion. At the end of the day, the people that have ascended to the power of government in this country are not what you would call brilliant. What they do is they mask a lot of this with the idea of where they went to school. I'm an Ivy Leaguer. Well, good. I graduated from this. Well, good for you. And suddenly people associate the degree and the place they go to school with some sort of higher level of intellect. It's not the case at all. In fact, I would argue that the average IQ in Congress is lower than most of your children at home. We're dealing with a bunch of walking retards that have taken over this country and are being controlled. And worse yet, is that most people in government have some sort of greedy passion that has been fueled by people with nefarious intent. Little things like having an obsession to have sex with children. And so they're fed that. And then you'll hear this one. I was blackmailed. You can't get blackmailed unless you were willing to do it. It's that simple. So, we are dealing with a level of corruption that is beyond scope in the Capitol. It's the way it is. And there's no way to fix it. You have to rid it. You have to use Drano and get it down the toilet bowl. Continuing. It may perhaps be asked how the shortness of the duration of office can affect the independence of the executive on the legislature, unless the one were possessed of the power of appointing or displacing the other. One answer is this: to this inquiry may be drawn from the principles already remarked, that is, from the slender interest a man is apt to take a short-lived advantage and the little inducement it affords him to expose himself on account of it to any considerable inconvenience or hazard. Another answer, perhaps more obvious, though not more conclusive, will result from the consideration of the influence of the legislative body over the people, which might be employed to prevent the re-election of a man who, by an upright resistance to any sinister project of the body, should have made himself obnoxious to its resentment. Now, in that paragraph, there's a couple of things that are alluded to that are important to grab. Keep in mind that the House of Representatives was always designed to be a rotational body every 2 years. And if people were doing their job and their duty to the nation of being engaged in politics, they would ensure that it wasn't pencil whipping what a congressman was doing just to get him back in office because, oh, it's convenient, I know his name, but substantively looking at what these people were doing and what they were standing for. And therefore, the House of Representatives would be a constant rollover of bodies over time as people put somebody in for 2 years, assessed them, and decided whether they were truly representing their local interests, and be willing to put somebody new in to revitalize those interests as things went along. That was part of the security, the check and balance of caring to prevent corruption within one part of the legislative. The stability in the legislative was the idea that people were put in for as senators for 6 years to represent state-level issues, not so local to the people. And they were considered to be wiser in their, because that sort of commitment for 6 years in that time meant that you couldn't afford to be in government. You couldn't turn government into a career, so you went for 6 years. And then you have the presidency, which is 4 years. So it was not too long to allow them to get dug in like a corrupt leadership, and not too short that they wouldn't be able to have some effectiveness of their job. Unfortunately, what we've become is an industry of re-election. So a president gets in, he has his first year of setting the cabinet and getting things rolling, he has his second year of doing a job, he's on his third year, he begins the process of re-election. He goes to a re-election his third year and gets re-elected in his fourth, and the nonsense starts over again. It's completely screwed up. To Canada's benefit, the one thing that they do up there very well is they limit the campaign time to, I believe, 30 days. can't campaign before, and you can only give dedication to the campaign for 30 days. I think I'm right on that. It's something we should look at. Continuing, it may be asked also whether the duration of 4 years would answer the end proposed, and if it would not, whether a less period, which would at least be recommended by greater security against ambitious designs, would not, for the reason, be preferable to a longer period, which was at the same time too short for the purposes of inspiring the desired firmness and independence of the magistrate. It cannot be affirmed that a duration of 4 years, or any other limited duration, would completely answer the end proposed, but it would contribute towards it to in a degree which would have a material influence upon the spirit and character of the government. Between the commencement and termination of such period, there would always be a considerable interval in which the prospect of annihilation would be sufficiently remote not to have an improper effect upon the conduct of a man endued with a tolerable portion of fortitude, and in which he might reasonably promise himself that there would be time enough before it arrived to make the community sensible of the property of the measures he might incline to pursue. Though it be probable that as he approached the moment when the public were by a new election to signify their sense of his conduct, his confidence and his firmness would decline. Yet both the one and the other would derive support from the opportunities which his previous continuance in the station had afforded him of establishing himself in the esteem and goodwill of his constituents. He might then hazard with safety, in proportion to the proofs he had given of his wisdom and integrity, and to the title he had acquired, to the respect and attachment of his fellow citizens. As, on the one hand, a duration of 4 years will contribute to the firmness of the executive in a sufficient degree to render it a very valuable ingredient in the composition, so on the other, it is not enough to justify any alarm for the public liberty. If a British House of Commons, from the most feeble beginnings, from the mere power of assenting or disagreeing to the imposition of a new tax, have by rapid strides reduced the prerogatives of the Crown and the privileges of the nobility within the limits they conceived to be compatible with the principles of free government, while they raise themselves to the rank and consequence of a co-equal branch of legislature, if they have been able in one instance to abolish both the royalty and the aristocracy and to overturn all the ancient establishments as well in the church as state, if they've been able on a recent occasion to make the monarch tremble at the prospect of an innovation attempted by them, what would be to be feared from an elective magistrate of 4 years' duration with the combined authorities of a president of the United States? What but that he might be unequal to the task of which the Constitution assigns him? I shall only add that if his duration be such as to leave a doubt of his firmness, that doubt of inconsistent with a jealousy of his encroachments. Publius. So, this entire discussion here is the discussion of the importance of a limitation of term. Effectively, term limits. One of the master term limits that was in place in this time, and we've talked about this before, was the fact that death was one of your term limits because life was short. Your life expectancy was about 55 years old. So the whole idea, first of all, didn't matter what government paid you. Once you got into the presidency, 4 years, you were limited. You had to be 35 years old to run as a president. And there were no limits on the presidency, by the way, at this time. They could run as many terms as the people wanted them. 4 years would put you at 39. Another 4 years would put you at 43. Even a three-term limit at 47, if you did three terms, you were expected to be dead by 50 to 55. There was a physical limitation to how long people could be in office. Senators, 6 years, had to be 30 years old before they could run as senator. Two terms of a senator, 6 years, you're 42. One more term, you're 48, you're almost on deathbed row. So these things were naturally built in by the lifespan of people. Now we're having people living 40s midlife. 80 is now considered to be like the new 65. Not kidding. I literally heard it said the other day, it's like, you know, person's only 85 years old. They still have a lot of life left in them. That's a true statement where we're arriving now. So when we open up the door for people to get into the Senate and we have an apathetic public that refuses to do its job to hold people accountable, these people ride term after term after term unabated. And all they do is continue to line their pockets and use the wealth that they accumulate and the power they can accumulate to build their empires. So, term limits now become a very real issue. And I, for a long time, have been against term limits because constitutionally we have term limits. It's just the vote. But when we see the mechanisms of power working to corrupt the voting system at the depths that we have, we see the apathy of the public to get engaged, which I don't know how much that's ever going to change. And I'll be honest, we can't have a lot of hope in that because we now look at how many people willfully accepted tyranny with this damn shot. Once we get to those places of understanding the true human nature of our nation, there are certain safeguards that need to be put in place to ensure that these dirtbags don't continue. A senator should be maxed at 2 terms. Person in the House should be maxed at 3 terms. A president should be limited to 2 terms. That's simple. Now the system begins to have some boundaries on it. Families can't be allowed to run their same family members term after term. You can't use those family networks. Each family needs to be audited. Not just the candidate, but the family needs to be audited. Publicly disclose to the public what their finances are, who funds them, who they're related to, what corporations they're part of, so people can see it. That's going to be just the cost of admission. Crimes need to be exposed. I mean, it has to be an open book. And once we start to deal with this as an open book, a lot of these problems start to fall out. It's literally dark to light all the time. Our founding fathers could not have seen some of these things because they couldn't foresee the evolutions of medical science. And they did an amazing job of creating checks and balances in our system, which are amazing. Like I said, 2 years for the legislative or the House, 6 years for the Senate, and 4 years for the president. When you look at how that works, the president is autonomous from the influences of each of those bodies, Senate and the legislative. The Senate can hold out, which it does. We've seen that happen. The legislative gets turned every 2 years, so it has to fight the struggle. And the president has a straight line of 4 years and the will of the people. So the system works when we put term limits on it as intended, but the term limits now have to be mandated. We can't just have them expected because you're going to kick it off into the depths of death when you turn a certain age. But our founding fathers were brilliant. They gave us the foundation and template for this nation. They also understood that there would have to be some adjustments made to this in the Constitution over time. And now as we have the benefit of experience and the wisdom that teaches from that experience, and especially the experience of failure in the context of how things were intended, we now have to come to a reasoned discussion, not a passioned discussion, meaning no emotion but reason, and listening closely to God, because in all things in this nation, we are accountable to God in this construct of moral law, which is established in the Declaration of Independence, which is our inalienable rights. And when we start to understand how this picture works, then if everybody really gets it, the number of people they will line up to do stupid things like get a shot because they're not going to give you your rights back, which they never had a right to take away in the first place. they will stop doing dumb things like that. At least we hope. And the only way we're going to ensure that is to understand what these terms mean, get in front of people, talk to them as members of this society, and start teaching our kids the right way of thinking of how the system is supposed to work. That's the only way forward. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time. We thank you for the wisdom passed on to us by the framers of this nation and the wisdom given to us each day in our heart by you. We ask that we'll continue to reflect deeply on this wisdom as we move forward to learn, to see with clear eyes, as we reshape this nation and reset this nation on the rock of faith and in the words, truly in God we trust. To construct this nation once again under the framework of moral law, accountability to you in all things, and a true government that's accountable to and the will of the people. Guide us, protect us in all we do. Bless us on this journey. We say these things in Christ's holy name. Amen. All right, Patriots, hope you have a very blessed day. I'll see you tonight for Bards FM. Tonight I've got a good interview with Pastor Casper McLeod from Atlanta. Neat guy. He's a rock and roller. He's actually the only pastor ever to give a sermon at the Woodstock anniversary. Has saved a whole bunch of artists. You'd be amazed. He's British by birth, American by citizenship, passionate about what he does, creative in what he does, and a great voice. I had a great conversation with him yesterday. I look forward to sharing it with you tonight. So, tonight, Bards FM, or whenever you get around to it, keep your head up and eyes forward. Never bow to evil, never relent, always press into the fight. Prayers up for our nation and healing. Prayers up for the need to have knowledge in what we do. Knowledge leads to wisdom. God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And in the end, God will always win. So see you tonight or until the next time. God bless. And out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again.
Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion, which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Has waited thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. Push. We climb. We never give in. We become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray. We stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.